Hey, I got somebody here for you. Wants to say hi.
Gigi desu ka?
Genki
最近何をしてますか？
今、歩いてきました。
チャックは教えていましたら、毎月は日曜日は歩けていますか？
そうだね、友達と週末歩いてます。
私も毎週ジムに行きますから、今、大体一日はジムに行きます。なぜならちょっとおじさんになりました、私。
言ってるんすか。
嘘だ。でも先生はまだ若い見える。秘密は何ですか？
そう、よかったよかった。
まだ同じ見えるで、本当には年は地味ない。本当に若者見えるよ。
ひげがないからね。
Coming out of this podcast, just a man doing the best he can with what he got. And right now, I have a very special guest, a man I've been trying to get on the podcast, one of the most influential men in my life, the guy who actually got me through college. Like one of my greatest professors that never taught me technically in a class. The great Professor Charles Hammond. How you doing, sir? At the University of Tennessee at Martin, I must say my alma mater. How you doing, sir?
Really, really good. And as usual, I tell you this every time, but we're really, really proud of you. We're really proud of you. For us, you're more like a nephew or cousin, So every time I hear about you and about how well you're doing and stuff like that, and that gives sensei in me that warm feeling inside, that fuzzy feeling.
Okay, let me give you a roses real quick though, and I try not to make this too emotional, but
Yeah.
I will say for me as a young man,
Yeah.
I have dyslexia, ADHD, and I'm a high school dropout. So I always had like insecurity about my education and how smart I was and my environment growing up. As you well know, I am from the hood, the hoodie hood, 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 hood. So when I went to college, it was kind of a hustle for me because I had the GI Bill. But when I got there, I felt imposter syndrome because I didn't belong. But your wife, my teacher, my Japanese teacher, she saw something in me because she saw like how I was doing. She's like, you know what? You should meet my husband. That's what she said. She said, you should meet Chuck. And when I met you were so encouraging. And actually, I think you saw something in me like, okay, this guy can do it. And you taught me that it was a balance between being, quote unquote, the hustling tough guy, and you could be the intellectual. You didn't have to pick and choose. I could be both. So I thank you so much because you were like a grounding force in my college career to let me know, oh, I can be both. I don't have to choose. I can embrace everything I am.
Well, that is super humbling for me. It makes me feel like, we're making some kind of difference over here. I can tell you one thing, Marcus, and I know Sensei agrees with me on this. I'm looking over here like she's here, but she's not. What we could do here with a classroom full of Marcuses, there'd be no limit, because as my dad always used to say, it's really, persistence is really, when you think about it, 90% of the game. You have not only persistence, but you also have ambition. And that's a dangerous combination in the best sense of the word, dangerous. This podcast is one example of that. Just keep doing what you're doing. And one thing, and I think you could probably appreciate this now, but then you could at the time, is when you come here, the institution, the college doesn't just change you, you change the college. It's a very subtle thing. And when we have people from different places, from different socioeconomic levels, and all this other stuff, then you come here and you also change the culture. And you also open the door for others who are, in similar situations. And before you know it, you graduate. And I don't know if you've had this happen to you before, because I still feel imposter syndrome and I'm 54 years old. But, when I have somebody say, oh, I really admire you, or I really look up to you, or something like that, I'm like, me? You ever have that feeling?
All the time. Sometimes you're like, ew, guys, I ain't nobody.
But
Like, don't put me up
it
there.
makes, yeah, exactly. But it makes sense because you think about your past and people you looked up to, or people who had a big effect on your life or something like that. And, like they say in West Tennessee, they just put their britches on one leg at a time too. They're human. Then you realize, well, okay, maybe I am worth it, because we look a lot of times at these figures who are influential in our lives, kind of like an 8-year-old looks at his dad,
Pretty much, yes.
where my dad can do anything, et cetera, et cetera. And then later on, you start to realize,
Just
there are a
flawed
lot of things.
individuals, yeah, flawed
Yeah,
individuals. We all got flaws,
exactly.
right? I mean, that's one thing when you
Right.
get older, you realize, like, oh, my parents were just trying to figure it out, too. I get
Exactly. They're just
it. I
trying to
get
figure it
it now.
out. They're people too, But, that's the intensely beautiful thing about flawed human beings is when they're being their best, they're just amazing. And you don't have to be perfect. You can be effing far from perfect to have an amazingly positive impact on somebody's life. And another thing you learn as a professor, and you don't have to be a professor, is one beautiful thing about youth is reckless.
It is.
It's,
Yes.
and what I mean by reckless is, at my age, if somebody comes up with an idea and says, well, let's go to, Columbia, or let's do this, or let's do that, I sit down and I do the cost benefit analysis and all this other shit because I'm old, right? And I realize, I realize that, that I try and plan ahead, stuff like that. And when you're young, you don't plan ahead for shit, at least most people. And you make decisions on a whim, and sometimes for worse, but a lot of times it's your heart telling you, hey, this is the time to take that opportunity. So I can give you examples of times in my life where someone told, dropped a single sentence on me, and it completely changed the whole trajectory of my life.
Well, you t
But
you told me to go to Japan. Like, it was
yeah,
you.
exactly,
And
right.
I wish I would have did it earlier, because I graduated before 25. You said, I remember you said, hey man, you should go to Japan. And I was like, oh yeah, I was thinking about it. And then like 4 years later, I was like, okay, I need to do it now. You're right.
Well,
And Matt,
and a
props to you
lot.
again for actually helping me out, because you wrote helped me write my letter to get my job, if you remember that.
That was. But you know what? Everything I wrote in that letter, my friend, enjoys the minor virtue of being true. And it's only the imposter syndrome, the self-doubt that holds us back, that makes you doubt that.
My acting career could have been so much better if I left at 25, though. Like, see, if I would have left at 25, my acting career in Japan would have been so much better. I could have made that Hollywood run. I mean, I'm still doing Hollywood movies now, but I see the potential. Like, man, I should have just went when he
Oh,
said, go. That would have been the move. Because would you? All right, so higher education is really important, I think, for like not even economic growth, but social growth. I think there's a buffer
Oh,
between
yeah.
18 and 25, especially for young men. I'm not trying to be just
Sexist or anything. No,
sexist or anything,
that's
but
absolutely
like
true. Yeah.
for men, that 18 to 25 gap is a weird time. If I didn't have that mentorship from you and others, like even Dr. Coffey at the University of Tennessee at Martin, and Dr. Robinson, and Dr. Nanny, and even White Rodney, who we didn't get along, but I get what he was trying to do now. But
Exactly.
like those professors now, if I didn't have that mentorship, I definitely would have steered off. So, which leads me to my question. What do you think will be the effects of AI on higher education? Are you pro or against? What's your thoughts?
Everybody who knows me knows me as a liberal, lefty, whatever, et cetera. And people who know me better know that I have my conservative side. And nowhere is my conservative side in more evidence than when it comes to education. I am very old school. I do things in my class like dictation, okay? It might as well be like 1900, like in my class. I think that in our race to improve education, we kind of fall into this fallacy where because it's new, it's better. Or because we incorporate this new thing, that means we have to throw out the old thing. And so we end up with these, now I'm going to drop some pedagogy on you, so these mutually exclusive binaries, where it's either one or the other, where it's like this zero-sum game. And it's ridiculous. I mean, if you incorporate, AI in your classroom, more power to you. But, make sure it's not at the cost of students being able to write, or make sure that it's not at the cost of, right? Or it's not at the cost of students being able to conduct research. And, it's easier for me to say, obviously, because I teach German, it's going to be pretty hard for them to cheat. But, when it comes to an English, when it comes to it, you ain't pulling any wool over my fucking eyes. When it comes to essays and stuff like that, and I'm talking about the humanities because the humanities is sort of my thing. But I have to say, like, what I know about AI so far, I'm not that crazy about. And what I know about AI's capacity for helping students cheat really kind of, it's serious. It really gets me down, It's like, oh yeah, I play football, and you've got super glue on your gloves.
Yes,
You know,
stickles.
like, you know, you didn't, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not impressed, if you caught the ball.
It's so funny you say that right now, because my thing with AI is, first, if we look at, every once in a while, art imitates life. If you look at Skynet's original purpose was to defend and to weed out defense. I feel like we're like 3 steps from Skynet, because
God, that's so true.
nobody takes in consideration like the environmental impacts.
Yes.
All this compute, you're gonna have to use resources, fresh water for cooling, AI growing ethics, deep fakes, new
Yes.
videos of people. And this is the other side of education, because when I see new technology, I think about the terrible things first.
Yes.
That's just me. So I'm
Which you
like,
should.
yeah, but as a kid in college, I was kind of stupid. I can see college students, okay, I can make a porno of that student right there. Only thing I need is a Facebook picture,
Oh,
and
yeah.
bam, here go a porno. New images of classmates, and then because girls are already, well, I'm sorry, women are already over sexualized anyway.
That's right.
So, like, this is all
No,
bad to
you could use
me.
it for anything from revenge porn to actual, illegitimate fake news. These deep fakes, I'm glad you mentioned that too. If you ask me one thing that scares me the most about the political future and stuff like that, it is that. Because if politics has shown us anything, there are always people out there willing to do whatever. They don't give a shit how legal it is, how ethical it is. They don't play by the Queensberry rules, and they'll put anything out there. And right now, at least with deep fakes, like, we can prove that it's a deep fake.
Yes.
It's a pain in the ass, but you can get like an actual authority on the subject, somebody with some expertise, point out that, wait, this has been faked.
Well, the technology is not there
It's
yet.
not there yet, but I'm totally with you. I mean, we're about that close,
So
and I
much.
feel it too. I feel it in my bones, like, it's one of those things where you think it's decades away and stuff like that, but if you think that, then you underestimate human ingenuity. Without sounding too conspiratorial or too much of a guy who thinks science fiction is real, I think the point at which we create AI that is self-conscious, that has self-consciousness, that's when you're in Skynet territory. And I think that day is not nearly as far off as people think.
No, we are totally the same on this, and that
Yeah.
goes to like one of my main concerns with education, because the AI has to, people don't know, LLM, a large language model, has to be fed, and that's basically the AI's brain. But the problem is you have biased people feeding the information. So you see even now that sometimes these LLMs will spit out racist rhetoric because the
That's
people
right.
who fed them the information are flawed humans. So
Exactly right.
you're going to have a whole nother consciousness of just racism being perpetuated. And people always ask,
Yes.
well, how did this racism start? Kind of like
No.
this.
No, you're right. You're right. And sexism. And going back to
Yes.
your original point about, men ages 18 to 25, that is such a critical time. I mean, the whole reason that Andrew Tate, an alleged rapist, an alleged sexual trafficker, and I'm saying alleged so that, this podcast stays on the right side of the law, but the evidence is pretty overwhelming.
Yes.
But this guy has, 4 million subscribers and stuff like that. He wouldn't have any subscribers at all if it wasn't for the crisis of masculinity, where you have 18 to 25 year olds saying, okay, I want to be a man. I don't want to be a cuck. I don't want to be soft. Oh, here's a guy who's going to show me how to do it. And there's an internal contradiction in this whole alpha male discourse. And that is, if, men were naturally XYZ, they wouldn't need a video course on how to do it. Right? Right? I mean, when it am I right? Like it would just come to you naturally. Like nobody had to teach me how to eat, or no one had to teach me how to find women attractive and stuff like that. That's just
so true.
Right? And so the fact that a guy like that is so popular is indicative of a lot of men running around wondering, how can I be a man? And also, this is also my age speaking, because I was 18 to 25 and stuff like that. And the whole reason that, I joined the Marines and stuff like that was partially because of that. But at my age now, like, I feel like I'm getting a little bit of enlightenment. And I realize now that it's much easier to hurt somebody than to help somebody.
It is. Yes.
Just like it's much more, I myself am not a Christian, but I think the absolute best thing about Christianity, because I don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think the absolute best thing about Christianity is the idea that it's harder to love than it is to hate. And when you realize that essential truth, it's deep, man.
Well, that's what makes the life beautiful, though, when you actually go against that. Because I truly believe, and you can disagree with me, but I got this from you. I believe that all humans are inherently kind of bad, naturally. So when you go against that, that's what makes it. It's like monogamy.
Exactly.
I would say this,
the
monogamy
bad, right.
Is unnatural.
Being bad is easy.
It's easy, but going against that makes it better.
Yes. Being good at being bad is hard.
Yes.
But, Trump sucks, and lucky for us, he's not very good at being bad.
Oh, if he was just a little bit more competent, he could have got away with it.
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit
exactly,
more competent.
Right. No, luckily for us, the diabolically clever, the diabolically intelligent criminal is really, really the exception, not the rule.
Yes.
If you have any friends in law enforcement and stuff like that, you they would tell you stories. You're like, he did what? This is a dumb motherfucker. Like, he thought he was gonna get away with that shit?
Yep.
Luckily, that's really the rule. But it's easy to hurt people. It's much harder to help them. It's easy to hate people. It's much harder to love. So now, I'm kind of the opposite of Andrew Tate now. Like, if you ask me, okay, who are like the strongest men like you really admire, like in history, like, I mean, hard as fucking nails, I would say, probably Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. You know what I'm saying? Like, those guys to me are like, oh man, I don't think I'll ever reach that stage of enlightenment, and how strong they had to be in order to do what they did.
Indeed. Masculinity is a funny thing to me, though. As I've gotten older, I realized there's no one way to do this. And
no, no, exactly.
What
right.
helped me get over the hump, because I had a lot of toxic in me, but what actually helped me was the Army. When I went in there, you had something called a battle buddy. My battle
yes.
buddy, the guy that was in the tent with me, we did combat training, shot out distinguished honor grad for my unit, but he was right behind me. He was second.
Mm-hmm.
And we were a team. We done showered together. We done did everything. Last day of basic training, he's like, yeah, Marcus, I'm gay. And that was the beginning of, like, wait, huh, no, but wait, hold on.
Right.
How can you do all this quote-unquote manly stuff I'm doing
that's right.
better than me at some points and not be a man? So that's when it hit me. Like, oh, what's really is I'm scared that you're going to treat me like I treat women. And once I realized that, I had to start treating women better.
Yeah, exactly right. No, it's funny you said that. I mean, it was during boot camp for me where I realized that I gave up a lot of my sexist beliefs or convictions or whatever, because those things are conditioned. Those things are socialized.
I'm so cold, yeah.
So I'm a capitalist, but I don't know why I'm a capitalist. I know why in theory I'm a capitalist, but like I gotta know the counterpoint to actually be like, okay, now I'm firmly steeped into this capitalism.
Capitalism has its advantages and socialism has its advantages. And I think that the Germans really got it right. And the Germans aren't the only ones. I would say pretty much all of Western Europe, where, yeah, they got capitalism. But for absolute necessities like medical care, it's socialized. Just like it's socialized, you were a soldier. Just like it was socialized, well, just like it's socialized for soldiers, just like it's socialized for senators and congresspeople, you know? And I don't see them trying to give it back, do you? So if it's that bad, you know, as bad as they try and make it sound, I want them to be take the first step and give up their free health care that's paid for by our taxes, right? So you and I are already on to politics as usual.
But the
So
sad part about that is like the hypocrisy is so blatant to the
yeah.
point that they'll tell you that, hey, minimum wage, you should be able to live off minimum wage.
That,
So
oh yeah.
why doesn't
No,
every
that's
politician have minimum
yeah.
wage then? If minimum wage is livable, then I think
Mm.
every public servant should have minimum
Ex
wage.
exactly. Of course, it's not livable. And, you know, the dirty secret is that Republicans are and always have been against the whole idea of a minimum wage. It's not like, oh, you know, we think it should be, you know, 17 an hour and they think it should be 13 an hour. You know, if they had their way, we'd go back to 19th century. And the reason you need a minimum wage is because if you don't have it, it's a race to the bottom, right? You know, capitalism does certain things really well. You got to give it credit where credit's due. You know, competition does produce, you know, improvement in products and stuff like that. You know, all that stuff's great, but it's got a dark side too. I mean, and you know, the best kind of economies I think you find on the planet where people have the highest standard of
Mixed
living,
economies.
it's a mixed economy, right? It's mark it's capitalism with a social net. And, you know, these guys pretend like they're so against socialism and stuff like that, but, you know, I don't see them saying we should get rid of cops. I don't see them saying we should get rid of the fire department. All that stuff is by us, you know, is made possible by us pooling our money, pooling the risk. And it works very well. That's why nobody's saying, you know, oh, you know, let's switch to a capitalist model where every time the cops come, I have to pay for it. Right? Because you right, because we all there's at some point you need it. You know, same thing with you know firefighters, you know, all that stuff. You know, they're soldiers, like we said. There are certain things that we socialize. So all of us are socialists. It really depends on what, you know, to what degree.
Yeah, it's like
That's really right.
it's a spectrum.
There's no pure capitalism on earth. You
Yeah.
know.
It's much like sexuality, it's a spectrum. How far do
Yeah,
you lean? How far do
exactly.
you lean? You lean this much? Because I always say that I'm a capitalist, but
Right.
I'm quick to point out the flaws of capitalism. Like,
Of
look,
course.
it's flaws in
Of
this stuff.
course. And when you don't point out the flaws or you don't acknowledge the flaws, then it becomes a religion.
Yes.
Then you know, then you really believe in, you know, or pretend to believe in Adam Smith's, you know, invisible hand and stuff like that, you know, and it's not a mystery. It's not magic. It's not perfect. It has its flaws, et cetera, et cetera. And if we can get to a point where we can acknowledge that much and then introduce a social net for necessities, you know, people need to be housed. People need to eat. People need to be educated. And these things shouldn't be left up to the whims of whether or not your parents make a lot of money or not. And what they've been able to do in Germany, and it's based on their bitter experience, is there is a baseline. There's a baseline that applies to everybody. So in Germany, you know, if you're poor and stuff like that, you're not running around without any health care. You have the social net. If you're richer in Germany, you can buy your own health insurance. It gives you more benefits. That's great. But you don't have anybody running around not able to afford to go to college. Or not able to, you know, get decent health care, or, you know, if you're homeless, or if you are suffering from mental illness and there's no support for you at home and stuff like that, then the state pays for that. And ultimately, that's a lot less expensive than just letting people, you know, just depriving them of any help at all. then they, you know, as you know, it's only a matter of time before they become wards of the state, and they're in the penal system, you know, and get arrested for this or that, and that's much more expensive, you know. Like Jesse Jackson said, I went and saw Jesse Jackson speak live in back in the 80s, which tells you how old I am, and he came to my university, and he said something I'll never forget. I think of it every day. And he said, it's more expensive to go to jail than it is to go to Yale.
Damn.
And that is deep. And he's absolutely right, right? Because when people become part of the quote unquote correction system, right? Or what am I trying to say? What's the phrase? But
Prison
you
industrial
know,
complex.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, thank you. When they be that's much better. When they become part of the prison industrial complex, that's a huge burden on taxpayers. And you know, then you have the phenomenon of privatized prisons and stuff like that. So, you know, these capitalists who pretend to be so in favor of capitalism, they socialize the costs and they privatize the profits.
Like Walmart,
And well, there you go,
the
right?
biggest users are their employees. They don't pay
That's
their
it.
employees a living wages, but and then they'll turn around and their employees have to spend money at Walmart.
Right. And they get yeah, not only that, but they're also on, you know, Medicare and stuff like that, because they don't get the benefits, you know. And so really all the rest of us end up paying. It's a very, very inefficient socialism, let's put it that way.
You're from California, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I am.
And I saw an article about In-N-Out Burger and fast food restaurants in California complaining about having to raise their wages to a living wage for their employees, and that's why food had to go up. And to me, this is the dumbest thing ever. And you correct me if I'm wrong, because I remember pre-COVID when fast food workers was asking for a living wage. At the time, it was like $12 an hour they was asking for, but the living wage was like $15 an hour. And everybody thumbed their nose at those people and said, no, if you do that, the McDouble's gonna raise up to $2. But inflation was always kicking in, and McDouble's already $2. And then they introduced these kiosk machines. And that was positioned that, hey man, we got these kiosk machines because you people were ungrateful. You see what you made me did? When that really wasn't because of the workers asking for a living wage. That was just capitalism. Any job that can be automated, you will because you're trying to increase shareholder value. That's how this capitalism works. But what really was the telling part about that when COVID hit, those same workers that we said was nothing, it wasn't worth that $12, we said, okay, now we give you $15 in a bonus because it's a scarcity. You guys are essential.
You twist their arms and they'll always give in, but you got to give them a reason to holler. You know, and corporate profits, you know, under Joe Biden, who we were told is a communist, he must be a pretty schizophrenic communist because corporate profits are through the roof. You know, and as you know, Robert Reich, who was the budget director under Clinton in the 90s, you know, back when we experienced the largest and fastest expansion of the US economy in history, he points out a lot the fact that, you know, they're very able to offer a minimum wage. You know, you can't have record corporate profits and say, oh, we can't afford to, you know, to throw you a little bit of extra cheddar. You know, it's just plain old greed, you know, and that's the dark side of capitalism. I mean, you know, Jeff Bezos, you know, dreams of making more money. How much is enough? Capitalism is good to an extent, but as you and I keep, you know, underscoring, we have to acknowledge its shortcomings as well. And if you acknowledge its shortcomings, it doesn't make you Karl Marx. You know, the funny thing about Karl Marx, and I've discussed this again and again with people, also people who grew up in East Bloc countries and stuff like that, and they know they're Marx, needless to say. And they said, you know, every one of them, I can't think of a single exception, every one of them said, you know, when you read Karl Marx and he's talking about capitalism, you can only like nod your head. Like his critique of capitalism is airtight. He calls it scientific materialism. And he points out stuff like, you know, there's no time in capitalism where there's not a crisis, or there's not a crisis right on the horizon. That stuck with me too. That's so true. You know, right now, as far as the US economy is concerned, things are pretty good. You know, we have record unemployment. We've got hundreds of thousands of jobs being added every month, and that's been true for 2 years straight. That's the first time, in my lifetime, that's true. Like I said, corporate profits, record profits. We're actually investing in infrastructure after we've had, president after president promise to do so.
Wait, no, we had infrastructure we under Trump though. We
Yeah,
had it.
exactly.
Three
Right, we had
times. You
infrastructure.
mean to
We
tell me nothing got built?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing got built. Exactly right. So all these things are really, really good, but like that article you sent me kind of pointed out, there, when you have low unemployment, there's always the danger of what? Inflation.
Inflation, yes.
And if there's inflation, then what does the Fed do? The Fed pushes up interest rates, so it costs more to borrow money. And if it costs more to borrow money, then you got to fire some employees. So there's always a danger lurking right around the corner. There's no time in capitalism where everything's just fine and hunky dory. And you have to be aware of that. And so when you read Marx, you'll read stuff like that, and it kind of sticks with you. And I would probably recommend reading a primer on Marx before you just break
Jump
out,
into
before you break out Das Kapital or something like that. That shit's got like 1,000 pages.
it.
But not that you're not smart enough to deal with it, but I get a primer first that shows you like the major points he's making. And another thing you could do is you could also read the Communist Manifesto, right? Which had as much of an impact on world history as probably any religion. When I was growing up, about 35% of the world was under a socialist or communist, regime. And it's brilliant because it's written for workers. It's not written for, it's written in a language everybody can understand. It's also the first work in human history that was published in multiple languages simultaneously. They published it in eight languages at the same time because they really wanted to like maximize the impact. And it starts with those famous words, "Workers of the world unite," but if you read it, you can tell that it's written for people. You don't have to have a PhD in economics to understand it.
All right, so this leads to the obvious next question that I gotta ask you. What do you think about this political climate? And okay, so we're in the same boat. People like to think I'm super duper liberal, progressive guy, and I am on a lot of things, but I do have a conservative streak in me. But I find this upcoming political season hilarious because you got two dudes. And we act like we ain't seen the last dude's movie. Like he didn't try to overtake the United States government. And I don't even know why this is even a thing. I had to apologize on my last podcast about because I thought for sure Nikki Haley was gonna get the Republican nomination.
You may have the last laugh in a way. Not necessarily, I don't necessarily mean that Nikki Haley is going to get it or something like that, although that's not outside the realm of possibility. Because all polling and stuff aside, right now, Trump is going to lose. He's
He
going to lose. He's not just going to lose. He's going to lose. He's going to lose in a historical, unprecedented way. And there are certain things you have to do in order to be elected. The very first thing you have to do in America, because it's America and we don't have publicly funded elections like you do in every other civilized country, is you have to have a war chest. Trump is broke. We know that. The RNC, Republican National Committee, is broke. The state GOPs are broke. A lot of the people in those state GOPs are indicted or are about to be indicted. Like in Arizona, their orange messiah is going to be spending most of this summer in court. And trust me, there's going to be as outrageous and preposterous and trifling and everything as all the things we know he did are already out there. There's going to be more. These prosecutors don't play, and they're not going to indict someone that powerful And unless they got the goods.
I said that the alphabet boys don't come after you unless they have an airtight case. Trust me, guys. I got a level of knowledge with this.
Exactly right. I mean, and that you realize people's ignorance of the law and the legal system in the United States is so appalling. It like makes you squint and stuff. There's this chick yesterday. I don't know why I got an email. I know you probably do the same thing. Every once in a while, someone ropes me into some inane argument. And she said, "Oh, all these fake crimes the Democrats are throwing at, Trump and stuff like that. Number one, it's not the Democrats. Number two, there's a two-tier system of justice in this country, and the beneficiary is Trump. Anybody else who's, threatening the judge's daughter and the family and witnesses and prosecutors and all this shit, his ass would be remanded to prison pending trial. That's the way it works. And prosecutors in the United States are so paranoid about being accused of election interference that they're letting him get away with this stuff. But make no mistake, it unless and that, the same thing goes for Fani Willis in Georgia. The same thing goes for Letitia James in New York, Alvin Bragg in Manhattan.
Kind of funny, a lot of people of color are actually stepping up and defending democracy, but I'll leave it
Oh,
alone.
it's beautiful, man. Not only it's beautiful because it's so historically ironic. Trump's racism is not just documented, it is redundantly documented.
Highlighted and shown.
Highlighted, this motherfucker wanted to throw the Central Park Five in prison. And this motherfucker took out a two-page ad in the New York Times saying we should throw these guys in prison. The whole reason Trump even came into the national consciousness was back in 1973, and he was being sued by the housing
Oh
the
yeah, I
HUD.
forgot about that.
Exactly, because they caught him red-handed. They went undercover, and they had a black, a couple black people were posing as a couple, who were working for housing and development. What is housing and urban development? That's right,
HUD, yes.
HUD, right? And they went in there, and they said, "Oh, we're looking for an apartment," And his people were like, "Okay, thank you for your application," And they marked it with a big B. I mean, they weren't even fucking subtle about it. They marked it with a B, and then they had somebody, another couple that was white come in there, and it was, "Oh yeah, we've got this one, that one, that one," So he was sued by the housing and urban development, and as usual, he settled because if he'd gone to court, he would have lost. And it's a pattern in his life. I mean, it's the same thing that he did with, Trump University. It's the same thing he did with the Trump Foundation. It's pretty pathetic. But going back to our original point, these prosecutors are not going to bring these charges against him unless the evidence is overwhelming. And that's the reason, even if we take Trump out of the equation, that's the reason why the feds, 99% of the time, these things don't go to court at all. They've got you dead to rights. You plead guilty, you get a lesser sentence, and we move on. And Trump, even though all the evidence is there, and we've got photographs, we've got camera footage, we've got tapes, including the case that's starting tomorrow. We've got literal canceled checks. We've got, I mean, all the evidence you could possibly have. He's going to fight it. And he's going to fight it in the court of public opinion. Because ask yourself, does he act like somebody who's innocent? If I'm accused of robbing this bank or something like that, I don't want to put off the trial. I want that shit to start tomorrow. I want you to put me on the witness stand, and I will show you A, B, C. There's no way I could have done that.
Well, there's two problems with that. The first problem is he's acting like a man who's not even running for president. It's obvious the man is running from the law. He's not being presidential. Everything the man does is a grift, from the shoes, which I must say is the most insulting thing ever, to make shoes, gold sneakers. I don't see nobody on the House floor wearing those gold sneakers. That was an obvious ploy. And you saw it on Fox News when it was like, subconsciously, he tried to get the black youth vote. So that's what y'all think of us. Y'all think that we're so capitalistic and materialistic that these ugly ass gold shoes gonna make me want to vote for this dude. Insulting.
And that's the thing for so many of these Trump voters. They're not dealing with black people. They're dealing with the stereotype of black people. You know, just like with the gay person you mentioned, right? They're not dealing with gay people. They're dealing with the stereotype of gay people. And you know, you the harder thing and the wiser and better and more productive thing is to deal with people as they are.
Not with the
stereotype of that person. And it's heartbreaking. But yeah, it was insulting as fuck.
But not only that, the true social going, so it's obvious the man doesn't have money. And this is the civil cases where I know he's not gonna be president. Like you said, the man is broke. It's obvious the man ain't got no money, because you don't start slanging $200. Those wasn't even on brand. You can make a case to me if that man made a loafer, because he always peddles himself as executive. That would have been on brand. But to do those gold sneakers, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a man who needs money. Just like the NFTs, just like the steaks.
He needs money like a tick fucking needs blood.
Right.
You know, like he really does. He is a fake ass billionaire. I mean, you do not see, Jeff Bezos or whatever, you know, hawking sneakers and Bibles and shit, you know, that it's pathetic. And I can tell you the rest of the world is like, what?
Oh, no. I was in Japan and I was the de facto American ambassador, and people literally come to me like, hey, man, what's going on?
Yeah. It's insane. But, you know, going back to what we were saying, another reason he's going to lose is because there's a very good chance he's going to be in prison, number one. But even if he doesn't go to prison, you had, you know, for example, in the Georgia election, Florida election, and you saw it consistently in these Republican primaries, you had a consistent like 20 to 35% of Republican, you know, voters saying, Republican voters saying, you know, voting for a convicted felon, that's a bridge too far.
That's too much.
And Trump needs every vote he can get. You know, I mean, even the election that he won, which he won on a fluke, he lost by 3 million votes.
Shout out to Bush.
Yeah, exactly. With the exception of Bush in 2004, and I know you know the answer to this question, so I'm going to be a professor with you. With the exception of 2004, when is the last presidential election where the Republicans won the popular vote?
No, Bobby Bush was the last one.
Exactly. That is exactly right. Bing, ding, ding, ding. All right, chicken dinner. 1988 was the last time, with the exception of 2004, right, where we were, you know, in the middle of a war and it was right after, you know, 9/11 and all that stuff. Other than 2004, that's the last election, presidential election, where they actually won the popular vote. And, you know, they know the demographics are against them. And that's why there's this whole election integrity, you know, push and stuff like that. They have zero proof that any election has been stolen. They have zero proof. They litigated the 2020 election 60 times, over 60 times. And they lost every single time. You know, when you get these wild claims they make, oh, thousands of dead people voted and thousands of illegals voted and stuff like that, and you put them in a courtroom where evidence and procedure matter, they lose every time. Rudy Giuliani himself said, this is not a case of frauds, you know, Your Honor. Well, that's funny. You said something very differently when you were outside this courtroom. And so, you know, the judiciary matters, truth matters, evidence matters. And if you ask me, like, if there's one change I would make, and of course I want to make 100 changes, but if there's one change I'd like to make to American political discourse, is I want to return to an evidence-based understanding of reality.
Do you think that can happen, though? Because we're at a post-truth time where truth is just a polarity of people.
You know, and there are more ways to hoodwink people than there ever have been before. And of course, you know, you've got the echo chambers that, you know, the right and left have. And, you know, my Twitter is different from your Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, Actually, my Twitter is probably very similar to your Twitter, but I'm, you know, what I'm saying is it's all designed
To
so
keep you on the
that
screen longer,
to keep
it
you
feeds
right.
you, the algorithms feed you what they think will keep you on the screen later, so you
Right,
make
which is
even an
people who
effort
agree with you mostly.
to.
You know, so all of those things work against an evidence-based understanding of reality. But imagine if we had an evidence-based understanding of reality, that would be like kryptonite for conspiracy theories.
Well, how do you go back to that, you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, back when I was, you know, in my a child in my teens, in my 20s and stuff like that, we had, well, number one, there was no Fox News. But number
True.
two, there was also a fairness doctrine that was the law. And, you know, and so we'd all watch Walter Cronkite. Don't you go, well, we'd all watch Walter Cronkite, you know, and so we certainly disagreed on politics, but we didn't disagree on reality. And what really just makes me despair for the future of this country is all the conspiracy theories. You know, they've got, you know, Fox News and Newsmax and all these guys. It all started really, in my memory, with Rush Limbaugh. They've got these guys lathered into such a frenzy that they think that any, you know, when there's an election, if they won fair and square. If they lost, well, the only way they could have lost was election fraud. And you cannot have a functioning democracy like that. In a democracy means sometimes your side loses and you just have to take it,
Well,
you
nobody knows what
know?
compromise means anymore. Compromise doesn't mean you get everything you want. You just get enough to keep on moving forward. People don't get that.
No, you don't, which is, you know, again, I got to give props to Biden. He was able to get that infrastructure bill passed. That infrastructure bill is no joke. That thing was $1.2 trillion.
Yes. Shout out to High Speed Internet for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the irony. He's getting a big part of that bill was getting high-speed internet infrastructure and stuff like that to ruby red states.
And they all Republican senators and congressmen took credit for
That
it.
the one nice thing with Biden, though, there are a couple of nice things with Biden. One is that he's not black,
True.
so they can't act like they did with Obama, and especially, God, I have to say, especially with Michelle Obama.
Yes.
You know, where,
Yes.
you know, Obama was saying, okay, you know, let's have this, let's have Obamacare, let's have the ACA and stuff like that. And the ACA, of course, disproportionately benefits people from poorer communities, whether that is a rural or an urban community, because you don't earn that much. And you take Tennessee, you know, a state you and I know something about,
A
and,
little bit.
you know, and right. And the ACA said, okay, Tennessee, we're going to fund you 100% for 3 years. And after that, we'll fund you 90%. The federal government will do that so that every man, woman, and child in that state will have access to health care. And their response was like, don't tell me how to run our state. We don't need any handouts from, you know, we don't need, you know, President Blackety McBlackman, you know, telling us how to run our state, you know. And it was just so stupid. I mean, on top of racist and tragic and all this other stuff, it hurts your brain how fucking stupid it is. The guy was giving Tennessee and other states like Tennessee the ability to dramatically improve the quality of life of its citizens. And they turned it down for political benefit.
Well, that's the hidden elephant in the room. It's always racial. 'Cause people always want to say, it's not racial, we're colorblind. But it's always race. But that was the beauty of Biden. Like, so this is what I've also said. Like, I truly believe that reparations are needed for black people. I can give you a list of reasons why. Now, but the thing is, right, in order to do that, I truly believe now what you're gonna have to do is you're gonna have to do means tests. Because the beauty of Biden was when he did that student loan proposal, the forgiveness proposal. He couldn't come out and say, hey, black folks, this is for you. He was like, you know
That's
what?
right.
Anybody who got a Pell Grant
That's exactly right.
and made under
Yeah.
40,000, how about we forgive your loans? And it just happened to lead to disproportionately help black people. And when it helped them, then you got to be like, okay, why are black people who are educated disproportionately in this hole? So then you got to shine a light at it. So it's like, no, I didn't say black. I'm just saying, all the people under 50,000 happen to be black. Why is that, guys?
You
And
know,
that
and there's
shines a
re
light to it.
you're so right. And there's reality and there are stereotypes. And the stereotype, which the Republicans have really, ever since Reagan, really, have bent over backwards to promote and to cultivate, is this notion that, we've got these social programs, and these black welfare queens
Welfare
who are
queen,
benefiting from
yep.
it and all this other stuff. And you look at the actual data, and the demographic that is most on welfare is white single mothers,
But
right?
that doesn't go with the narrative, though.
That doesn't go with the narrative, but those are the stats, and they've been that way for a long time.
But they need a hand up, Chuck, not a hand out. Those people need a hand up, but all the folks in the box, like, this is what infuriates me as a person of color, is I know what black people need, and black people need the same thing you give to other people. But it's
Of
just like
course, because they're
they've been,
people.
yes, but it's been denied so long. Like, basic needs and rights have been denied so long to the point where when you say it, it seems radical. It's like, no, you did this for the Irish. Like, you saw gangs in New York. Like, what they did was they gave the Irish opportunity, economic opportunity. They gave these poor white peasants land in the Homestead Act to build an economic base.
That's
But
right.
what they did with us was, hey, you're not slaves anymore. Everything should be okay. Never mind with redlining, Jim
Yeah, oh.
Crow, which, hey, did you know I figured out what Jim Crow was like 5 years ago? Like, it was actually an actor named T.D. Rice who actually did blackface, and he had a song called, well, a show called Jumpin' Jim Crow. And Jim Crow was a pejorative used to black people. I didn't know that to 5 years ago. But anyway, I digress. But all that stuff was done to us. That don't mean nothing because you're not slaves no more, guys. Never
That's right.
mind the USDA denying loans. Never mind the federal government sanctioning all these atrocities. But you're not slaves. Haven't we done enough? Dang it, white folks are so tired of being benevolent to you people of color. Sorry, didn't mean y'all
No,
that
it's
tipped me.
so true. No, I mean, I can't do anything but nod my head. You're absolutely right. And this country has a significant portion of this country has never ever dealt with the original sin of slavery. When the New York Times came out with this 1619 project, and for
Great
the
book.
uninitiated out there, 1619 is the year the first, enslaved people were brought from Africa to the North American continent. You wouldn't believe the hate that came down on them for this project. And this project, all it does is acknowledge a history that is demonstrable and examines the legacy of it. And, if you do that, you're woke and shit.
Okay, so that and that's another thing, right? I see it happen all the time. Words get pre move words that basically made in the black community get made into pejoratives. Like even DEI now is a code word for black. BLM became a code word for black. And now you see it with woke, which look, man, my family been using that word since the 80s. Like, just to stay up on your game, be socially aware that it's harder for you than it is for white people. Like, everybody know you gotta be 2 times better. That is something we're told at a young age. But once they get a hold of it, now it's woke. I'm like, what does woke mean? And that's my whole go-to now. I'm like, what do you mean by woke when you say that?
You're so right. And the another thing I never thought, there's so many things I never thought I'd see in the United States. And one that it infuriates me, like in the sense, it actually gets me violent. I get so mad about it, is this guy Trump will accept, he'll accept support. He doesn't matter to him where it comes from. When David Duke, the former grand
Wizard.
dragon of the KKK, threw his support behind Trump, and Trump was confronted with it later on. He was like,
I don't know
"Well,
that guy.
he seems like a nice enough guy to me." Like there's he doesn't reject that, and it got more and more intense. And now, he accepts the embraces really the these groups that always existed under a rock, but now they've been given permission to come out in the open. And I mean, for example, the Proud Boys, the Three Percenters, the Oath Keepers, all these guys. And when you see them, they're making this sign. Or excuse me. That sign, right? That sign is not A-OK. That sign is white power.
The power.
And they know it. You know, they know it, and they flash it loud and proud and stuff like that. And you know, when you look at when they're talking to each other on 8chan, you know, 8chan and shit like that, these guys jack off about the idea of a race war, and they have been for a long time. You know, one of the favorite books, if you want to call it, they've been passing back and forth for decades, is the Turner Diaries. And for it's basically this total, again, masturbatory like idea of this race war, you know, and Turner is like the, you know, this hero and all this other stuff. And you know, Turner Diaries are all the way back, go back all the way back to the 80s. But you know, for the Turner Diaries is to black and white relations in the United States. The protocols of the elders of Zion, are for, you know, Jewish relations to, you know, other groups.
This is
know.
A terrible pivot. Since you brought that up, I'm going to ask you this and feel free not to answer it.
Sure.
What do you think about the conflict in Israel now? Because I know you're a history buff and well-knowledged on that. And I've been embracing that history and learning about the Balfour Doctrine, the Ottoman War, and reading on that, because people try to make it seem like it's so difficult, but it really isn't.
You know, I'll tell you, it is really complicated. And, you know, there are aspects of it that aren't complicated, but when you take it all the way back to Zionism and the search for a you know, a homeland for Jewish people and all that other stuff, you know, it gets very complicated. The only thing I can say is that if there is a solution, that should tell you how pessimistic I am, but if there is a solution, it has to be a two-state solution. You cannot have millions of people, not only millions of people, but in one of the most densely populated areas on the planet, and have that place be a giant refugee camp and expect something other than terror. And when I mean by terror, I mean terror on both sides. Those guys making tunnels, going up there and shooting Israelis and stuff like that is a crime against humanity. F-16s going in and bombing apartment complexes in Gaza and stuff like that are also a crime against humanity. Terror cuts both ways. And if I ever ran for president and there was a Hammond administration, the Hammond administration would sit him down, try and promote a two-state solution that had guarantees from the international community. And so basically you'd have two states, but you'd have the United States and pretty much every other country that has a stake in it, guaranteeing the security of both Israel and Palestine.
So I'll be running for office when I'm 45 years old. I've already said that.
And I hope so.
Hopefully this conflict doesn't last as long. I hope that doesn't. But my solution for this whole thing is pretty much what you said. You're going to have protections for the Palestinians. Also, I hate the way, and this is me speaking, this is not Professor Chuck Hammond, this is Marcus, guys. So don't put him in this, what I'm about to say.
But I got you.
What I am about to say now is, it is obvious that Israel has made apartheid. They have made second, third class citizens out of the Palestinians. They're in control of everything. You have roughly 7 million Palestinians and 7 million Jewish people. After I read the Balfour Doctrine, it was already understood that Palestinians were there. That doctrine said that, hey man, we're gonna establish this homeland for Jewish people with the Palestinians, with the caveat that, hey, the Palestinians are to be left alone. Now, my thing was, that land was promised to the Palestinians. Like, just because white people in England said this is how it's going to be doesn't mean the people there have to take it. So it's imperialism in its point and its finest. And yo, I know there was a war, and the Six-Day War, and Israel won that. But once again, now you're in control of everything. You're in a position of power. Nothing can go in and out without Israel's blessing. So now you got people starving, you got bombs, you got people from the World Kitchen and aid workers being bombed right now. And not to mention before the horrific attacks in October the 7th, man, nobody wants to talk about Israel taking occupied lands and inching and inching. And also nobody wants to talk about the birthright land.
No, and you're right about that. And it's really, you know, when we say Israel in the United States, you really mean the Likud party.
Yes.
You know, you really mean the right wing Likud party, because the best kept secret probably in American politics is there is a huge Israeli left. There is a huge Israeli movement for the protection of the Palestinians, et cetera,
yes,
et cetera. But the Likud party has been in power for so long and led by a man, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, who is not only right.
War criminal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. War criminal.
Sorry.
And also, no, right. And it wouldn't bother him one bit. You know, if the United States nodded its head and said, you could do whatever you want, he'd wipe out every man, woman,
yes,
and child in there. He'd have no, and he'd sleep deeply at night. He wouldn't lose a wink of sleep about it. I mean, you talk about extremism, that's extremism. And, you know, we've been taught, you know, that extremism is only a phenomenon of the left. Both sides have their extremes. And this guy, he not only gives a nod to, or how should I put this? There are these so-called settlers who are the absolute right wing. They're the religious fundamentalists. And as far as their religious fundamentalism, they might as well be, you know, Al Qaeda, or they might as well be, you know, some of the more, you know, right wing militant Christians here in this mm-hmm. country. And he backs them up, you know, 100%. These guys are trying to encroach on Palestinian land, trying to build on Palestinian land. They have this notion of a greater Israel, just
yes.
like, you know, Germany under Hitler had this idea of a, you know, greater Germany and stuff like that. And
kind of ironic.
It's kind of ironic. You could say it's kind of, there's a lot of irony there. And so when we're told Israel and the Israeli government and stuff like that, what we're really being told here is the Likud party. And it is a dangerous thing and a misleading thing to think that the Israelis are, you know, 100% behind Netanyahu, or 100%. I mean, he almost got tossed on his ass about a year ago, facing criminal charges. You know, that sounds familiar too.
He tried to get rid of the Supreme Court over there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, what's more extreme than that?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah. So it's complicated. I don't pretend to have all the solutions, anything like that. But a Hammond administration would sit both sides down and see how we could go about making real security guarantees for both sides.
But the Johnson administration will also will put conditions on these war instruments that we're just given to. Like, because as an American, my name is being put on these bombs, and that's what really gives me pause. Because I keep telling everybody to ask questions is not anti-Semitic. I'm asking
political. Of course not.
It's almost like we're making this a theocracy instead of a democracy in Israel. It's like this is a political argument. It's not religious. I'm talking about Israel, the political institution, the state. What
yes.
did that state to do? If it's a democracy, it needs to stand up to a democracy. And before we give them more weapons of mass destruction, it needs to be predicated like, buddy, you can't be out here indiscriminately
right.
killing
I mean,
people.
Yeah. I mean, these they've been, ever since I've been alive, they've been given billions and billions of dollars for free. I think it's about $3 billion annually.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, that is a lot. And they've got the bomb too. You know, the Samson project was back in 1981. So they have the bomb, the whole thing. I think their military is okay, but now it's basically welfare. Again, we talk about socializing costs and privatizing profits. All that money goes back to Boeing and Raytheon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, all these subsidiaries and military. are benefiting from the largesse that the godly doesn't need. I mean, Israel has its own arms, everything, you know, everything, you know, fighter planes, whole thing. Uh-oh, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Your internet connection. Oh, okay, okay. It says your internet connection is unstable. So anyway, yeah, so going back to Trump, this is going to be fascinating. And it starts tomorrow. And Trump, this is another way, you know, there's a two-tiered justice system, is that Trump can afford, if you can afford it, then you can have lawyers who throw 10 motions at the judge every day.
Right.
And try to, you know, stop the wheels of justice. And the irony, of course, is that almost none of it is his own money. You know, he's been siphoning off, you know, his expenses since 2022, legal expenses, RIT. Just went over $100 million. Mm. You know, that's more than the GNP of some small countries like that. You know, that's mind-boggling how much money that is. But for every time he does that, that's a rally he can't hold. Those are flyers that can't go out. You know, those are staff that can't be hired. You know, those are get out the vote efforts that you can't, you know, those are television ads that you can't run. You know, so you need money. You want to get elected to the United States, you need money, and you need a lot of it. And the USS Trump has a giant fucking leak. And that is, you know, the fact that the captain is out on bail in four different jurisdictions.
So basically, what I'm hearing is Marcus Johnson, the commentator's podcast, is probably going to end up being right. He's not going to be the Republican nominee. That's what I'm hearing, right?
And how could he? And let's say the judge in this case, which is an elections interference case, right? I'm talking about Manhattan. Yes, it involves sex. Yes, it involves a payoff, but it is an elections interference case. And if he is convicted and he's facing, you know, 32 or 33 counts of falsification of business records, which is each of those is a misdemeanor. But in New York, it gets pumped up to a felony if it's in furtherance of another crime. And it is in furtherance of another crime. It's in furtherance of illegal campaign contributions, because when you do have a campaign in the United States, you have to declare every cent that you spend to help your campaign. And instead of that, what they did was falsify all the business records and stuff like that and make it look like they were payments to Cohen as an attorney retainer.
We went to jail for, right?
Exactly. And the reason their campaign contributions is because it was 2 weeks before the election. It was right after the Hollywood, what's it called? Access Hollywood tape came out.
The pussy
grabbing and stuff. Exactly. And they knew they needed every vote they could get. And if this came out, it could be very bad for them. And so, you know, they pay off not just one porn star, they paid off two. You know, the other one was McDougal.
Yeah, forget about McDougal.
Right. He had an affair with her that went about 6 months or something like that. So we're not talking about, you know, together it was about $250,000. And it was done through Trump's friend, David Pecker, who you gotta love that name.
Great name.
Who runs the National Enquirer. And David Pecker has already had to pay fines for his role in that. Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, has already gone to prison for that. So everybody's having to, you know, pay penalties and stuff like that, except the boss. And so the boss, the evidence is overwhelming. He knows it's overwhelming, and that's why he's done everything that he can to delay this trial. But he's in front of a real judge, Judge Juan Merchan in Manhattan, who's not putting up with any of his bullshit. And so it all starts tomorrow. And if, let's say, that he goes to prison for it, which he well could, anybody else would, Let's say he goes to prison for that. You're telling me that in July, the Republican Party is going to nominate a guy who's in prison as their standard bearer, right? I mean, it's so unimaginable for the American psyche, and it is so unprecedented that an observation like that, which is so obvious, right? Are you really prepared to nominate a guy who's sitting in a jail cell to as your nominee, and not only sitting in a jail cell, but has other criminal trials pending. So, he comes to court in a fucking orange jumpsuit. Like, yeah, that's the guy you're telling me, you're telling me his broke ass is gonna win, the elect. Of course not.
Is Professor Chuck Hammond at the great University of Tennessee at Martin, dropping that wisdom and knowledge on you guys. Thank you so very much. Or should I say Dr. Hammond, because you are a
Well,
doctor, you get that.
the pleasure and honor are all mine, and I look forward to your political campaign.
I'm gonna have
And
you as
you
advisor,
can
you know that,
you
right?
oh, I would happily be a surrogate. You
Yes,
could
you definitely are.
send me out there. That's right. So, but really look forward to seeing you again too, whether it's on this side of the ocean or that side. You're over there making us proud, as you have been for years. And thank you so much for the opportunity to come on here and speak to you and your viewers. And I hope they respond. They can comment, right?
Yes, they can.
Yeah. So I look forward to hearing or reading about the comments and stuff like that. But thank you so much. I always feel like I benefit from our interactions.
Nah, let me tell you something. I benefit more, and just once again, thank you for being a positive influence in my life and molding my political views. For those of y'all who don't know why I think the way I do, yeah, after listening to this podcast,
Well,
you're gonna see
you keep paying it forward, and everybody remember what we said out in the beginning, was it's harder to help people than it is to hurt people.
exactly.
And that's once you realize that, that's a deeply ethical, deeply profound, metaphysical, realization. And so practice it in your life, and I think that it'll enrich your life, not just the person you're helping.
All right, that's a good way to sign it off. All right, Chuck, I'm gonna let you go on that one, man. Thank you so very much. And